Kessel's landscape rushed beneath the armored transport. Han Solo could see only a narrow strip through the window slits in the prisoner's compartment. He and Chewie had been strapped into their seats and linked to resistance feedback electrodes that would knock them unconscious if they struggled too much. Skink's necks hunched over the pilot controls. An armored guard sat in the co-pilot's seat, directing his blaster rifle toward them. The Scarecrow guided the transport around a huge open pit that plunged deep into the ground. Rusted girders and support structures stood like skeletal fingers propped up in the whitish barrens. Skinksnik set the prisoner transport down on the rocky ground and fitted a breath mask over his nose and mouth. He gave another mask to the guard. What about us?
You won't be out very long. A little lightheadedness will do you good.
Punching a button on the control panel, Skinksnecks released their restraints. When Skinksnecks opened the side door to the transport vehicle, Han felt oxygen being stolen from his lungs. He and Chewbacca stumbled out of the craft as Skinksnecks and the guard prodded them. At the rim of the crater, they found an elevator cage on tracks that plunged deep into the pit. Skinksnecks seemed to be moving with deliberate slowness. Unable to breathe, Han tried to hurry, stumbling into the elevator cage and gesturing Chewbacca after him.
A few years ago, we had the atmosphere factories running full tilt,
Skinksnecks said.
Duel figured it was a frivolous waste of energy.
The guard shut the wire mesh door, and the cage descended at a rapid clip until the window of sky shrank to a small spot of blue light high above. They saw openings into the rock wall sealed off with steel doors. At each level, a ring of light encircled the pit, but many of the illuminators had either burned out or been broken. Chewbacca hung onto the bars of the elevator, panting for air. Han slumped on the elevator floor. When the elevator abruptly stopped, the jolt slammed Han's head into the mesh. As he looked down through the open cage floor, he saw the pit continuing immeasurably far below them. Opening the gate of the elevator, they had access to one of the sealed metal doors. Skinksnecks cranked the hatch, and Han and Chewbacca staggered into a small tiled chamber. As soon as Skinksnecks sealed the door, glorious oxygen flooded the chamber. On the other side of the airlock was a large muster room filled with lethargic-looking workers ready to begin their shift in the spice mines. The muster room had been blasted out of solid rock, and a tall bank of bunks ran along one side of the room. An empty eating section with long tables took up the central area. A burly man strode up to meet them, keeping his eyes fixed on Skinksnecks. The man had a lumpy face, a lumpy chin covered with bristly black stubble, and lumpy arms as if his massive muscles had all been attached to the wrong places.
"You brought me two more? Only two? Well, Wookiee's worth three men, but I don't know about the other one. This doesn't take care of half the people I've lost."
Skinksnecks glowered at him.
"Then stop losing people."
Skinksnecks nudged Han.
"This is Boss Roke. He's in charge of breaking you. He gets extra points with Morris Duel to make your life miserable."
"He doesn't seem to be doing a very good job of keeping track of his workers," Han said. Roke flashed him a withering glare.
"Something's taking my men down in the deep tunnels. I've had two more missing since yesterday. They've vanished without a trace."
Han shrugged. "Well, it's hard to get good help these days." Skinksnecks guarded Han and Chewbacca as they outfitted themselves in the mine uniform, thermal suits with breath masks attached. Once they were suited up, Skinksnecks left them to the tender mercies of Boss Roke.
"Shift Alpha, ready for work detail."
Boss Roke bellowed, and dozens of weary people shuffled to squares painted on the floor. Roke pointed to two empty squares.
"You two, positions 18 and 19, now!"
The workers mounted breath masks on their faces. Han and Chewbacca followed suit. A big metal door on the far side of the wall slid open to reveal an illuminated chamber 100 meters long, in which floated a centipede-like mine transport of little cars linked together by magnetic attractors. At the signal, the workers took their seats on one of the floating mine cars. Boss Roke took a seat in the pilot car. Other guards were stationed evenly throughout the open tram. All the guards wore infrared goggles. Behind them, the metal door slammed shut. All the lights went out. Han and Chewie plunged into an absolute suffocating blackness, like a blanket of tar. It came to Han like a slap in the face. The realization that since Splitterstim's spice was photoactive, made potent in the presence of light, it obviously had to be mined in total darkness, or else it would be ruined. Total darkness. Han and Chewbacca would spend their days at hard labor in the mines without ever being able to see each other, or where they were, or what they were doing. Han had to blink his eyes just to make sure they were open instead of closed. Not that it made any difference. A shiver went down his back. Boss Roque had said that some unknown thing was preying on the workers. How could anyone run from it in complete darkness? He heard the faint, echoed breathing of someone behind a breath mask leaning closer.
Are you really from the outside? I haven't been above ground for years.
It was impossible to make out the characteristics of the voice, muffled as it was behind the breath mask. Nonetheless, Han pictured a skeletal old man with long, scraggly hair, tattered beard, and ragged clothes.
We're from out there.
I'm Kip. Kip Duran.
After a moment's hesitation, Han introduced himself and Chewbacca. Suspecting some kind of trap, he decided not to give too much information. Kip Duran seemed to sense this and talked about himself without asking too many prying questions.
You'll get to know everybody here. I've lived most of my life on Kessel. My parents were political prisoners, exiled on this planet when the Emperor started cracking down on civil unrest. Is it really true the Empire has fallen?
7 years ago, Kip.
Something was happening to the cars ahead. The front car split off. He could hear it echo with a diminishing swoosh down one of the side tunnels.
They're separating the mining teams,
Kip said. When the car stopped, the guard spoke.
Everybody out. Link up. March to the work area.
After a long walk in total darkness, they arrived at the actual spice mining area.
We have to go deep to get the good spice deposits,
Kip said.
Down here, the glitterstim is fresh and fibrous instead of old and powdery like in the higher mines.
Before Han could say anything else, a high-pitched, teeth-jarring hum pounded against the tunnel. Then a skin of rock along the inner tunnel sloughed off. The guard had used an acoustic disruptor that penetrated only a few inches into the rock, crumbling it. Kneeling on the rubble-strewn floor, Kip showed Han and Chewbacca how to sort through the crushed rock, feeling with cold, numbed fingers through the broken pebbles and debris to pluck out strands of glitter stim like tufts of hair or asbestos fiber. During a lull, Han felt a tingle go up his spine. His ears, now attuned as his primary sense, picked up a distant rustling. It sounded like 1,000 whispering voices, growing louder, picking up speed, like a hydro locomotive bulleting down a tube. A pearly glow seemed to seep out of the air.
What?
Shh, Kip answered. The prisoners had stopped working. A faint glittering dazzle, like a dense cloud of fireflies, shot through the tunnel, humming and chittering. Han ducked. Around him, he heard others also falling flat on the debris-covered floor. The glowing thing shot down the hollow tube, rolling and roiling. It suddenly arced right and plunged straight into the solid rock, vanishing like a fish falling back into the dark pool. Behind them, along the curving lengths of the tunnel, tiny blue sparks flickered from the exposed spice that had been activated by the light source whizzing past. The blue sparks sputtered and flickered and quickly faded.
What was that?
Han shouted. He heard Kip panting beside him.
Nobody knows. It's about the 15th one I've seen over the years. We call them bogies. They've never hurt anybody, or so we think. But nobody knows what's grabbing those people down in the deep mines.
At the end of the day, the workers were taken back to the muster room. When the standard lights came back on, the blinding glare was enough to make Han crouch over as if someone had punched him in the gut. He shielded his eyes. He felt a hand on his back.
It's okay, Han. Let your eyes get used to it. There's no hurry.
But Han was in a hurry to see what Kip Duran looked like. He kept blinking away tears and peering out. When he finally discerned Kip's form, he blinked again, this time in surprise.
You're just a kid.
Han saw a dark-haired, tousle-headed teen. He had wide eyes surrounded by dark rims, and his skin was pale from years of living in the darkness of the spice mines. Kip was wiry and tough-looking.
Don't worry, Kip said. I do the best I can.
¶¶
Luke Skywalker sat alone in the cramped storage module Gantoris had given him for sleeping accommodations. Never intended as a living area, the module had few comforts, a basin of filmy water and a cloth-covered mound of dirt for a bed. Luke had his lightsaber and all the powers he had learned from Jedi training, should he decide to escape, but he didn't want to leave, not until Gantoris agreed to come with him.
Come with me.
Gantoris appeared in the square doorway. Without a word, Luke stood up and stepped outside.
Where are we going?
Gantoris handed him a woven pouch, then slung a similar one over his own shoulder.
To get food.
Tossing his thick black braid behind him, he marched toward the geyser field. Luke followed across the rugged terrain, sidestepping the lime-encrusted network of geysers and steam vents.
You must have heard something about the Order of the Jedi Knights.
Luke proceeded to tell the dark, silent man about his quest and how it had brought him to Eel Shah. He finished by asking Gantoris to join him.
Gantoris looked at him with dark, unfathomable eyes. Empires and republics mean nothing to me. What have they cared for us before? My universe is here, on this world.
He stepped in front of the wide opening to a geyser and peered into its depths, the stink of rotten eggs wafted into the air. From his hip pouch, Gantoris withdrew a battered old data pad and consulted a column of numbers that looked to be some sort of timetable.
Here, we will go inside the geyser and harvest.
Harvest what? Without answering, Gantoris lowered himself over the lip of the geyser hole. Luke shrugged off his Jedi cloak and left it beside the geyser rim, then followed the other man underground. The shaft was a narrow, winding chimney through porous rock, a pipeline for superheated water. Colorful mineral deposits sparkled white and tan and blue, powdery in his hand. Luke found plenty of footholds as he followed Gantoris into the honeycombed passages. The rock felt warm and slimy.
Gantoris worked his way into a side crevice. What do you want me to do?
In answer, Gantoris wedged himself deeper into a crack and shrugged the woven pouch off his shoulder.
Look in the dark pockets, the ones protected from the scalding water.
Gantoris dug his fingers into a crevice, felt around, and pulled out a handful of rubbery tendrils.
With the heat and the mineral deposits, the lichens have a rich growing ground. Takes a great deal of processing, but we can make something edible out of this.
Luke likewise removed his pouch and began to search in the cracks, probing with his prosthetic hand. He could read ominous intentions from Gantoris, but couldn't pinpoint them. The lichen wasn't difficult to find, and Luke quickly filled his pouch, crawling through narrow openings. Before long, he lost sight of Gantoris among the fissures.
Gantoris!
He heard no answer. Looking up the shaft of daylight poking through from the surface, Luke finally saw the man's silhouette nearly at the top. Gantoris scrambled up the jagged walls, climbing as fast as he could manage, leaving Luke behind. Luke sensed rather than heard the buildup of pressure deep within the planet. The water table, heated against magma, coming to a boil, rising up, finding the most direct escape. Gantoris had carried his own timetable. The geysers must erupt at regular intervals. He intended to trap Luke underground, where he would be cooked by curtains of superheated steam. Luke hauled himself up, climbing fast. The heat increased around him, making it difficult to breathe.
Then he ran out of time.
He heard the explosion deep beneath him, the roar of a plume of boiling water rushing to the surface. Luke knew he had only one chance. As the jet of steam and deadly water blasted toward him, he gathered his strength, his concentration, and sprang straight up, hurling his body out of the geyser shaft. He shot out of the geyser chimney, flailing his arms as he dropped to the ground. He tucked his shoulder and rolled, striking with enough force to knock the breath from him. A second later, a wall of steam and superheated water belched from the geyser. Luke shielded his exposed flesh and waited for the blast to dwindle. The geyser eruption lasted several minutes. When Luke finally crawled to his knees, he saw Gantoris and the other people of Eel Shah walking toward him, their faces grim as usual.
Gantoris crossed his arms over his chest and nodded. You passed my first test, Dark Man.
Luke sensed both eagerness and terror from the man.
Now come and face your last trial.
It was like a religious procession. With Gantoris in the lead, the people of Eel Shah began a long march up the slope to the cracks of lava. Spires of lava rock jutted out of the hillside like rotten teeth. Gantoris did not slow his pace when the slope took a steep turn, but he stopped when they reached a sheltered opening in the volcano wall. Overhead, a pall of smoke and ash hung in the air.
"Follow me inside," Gantoris told Luke.
The others filed past, continuing along the rugged path. Luke stepped after him. He needed to earn Gantoris's respect, if not trust. In this circumstance, Gantoris was making all the rules. Gantoris strode confidently into the dense shadows of the narrow passage. A lava tube blasted through the side of the cone to ease pressure from an ancient eruption. The lava tube spread out, revealing a boiling lake of fire. Though the fissure opened to the sky and other openings let in gusting cross drafts, the chamber felt like an oven. Squinting through noxious gases belching from the lava, Luke saw other people waiting on the far side of the chamber, their faces turned toward him. Gantoris had to raise his voice over the growling sounds of the churning magma.
Walk across the fire, dark man. If you reach the other side safely, I will allow you to teach me whatever you wish.
Without waiting for a reply, he disappeared back into the darkness of the lava tube. Luke stared after him for a moment, wondering if Gantoris could be serious. But then he noticed dark objects in the blaze of bright lava, hard stepping stones of denser rock that made a precarious path across the lake of fire. Stepping to the edge of the simmering lava, Luke peered up at the broken sky above him. Then he set his foot down on the first stepping stone. It supported his weight. He looked ahead, keeping focused on the opposite side. The gathered people kept watching. Luke moved to another step, then another. A tendril of euphoria began to rise within him. This wasn't as difficult as he had feared. Then the lava began to bubble and hiss more forcefully, gushing as something stirred below. Suddenly, a serpent-like creature burst above the surface, hissing like rocket fuel caught on fire. The fireworm had a triangular head and pointed ear tufts. Crystalline scales armored every inch of its body. Its wide eyes were jewels, glowing with a fire of their own. Insulated air intakes sucked in the hot atmosphere, filling bladders deep within the creature's core and making it rise to the surface of the lava pool, huge and fierce. As the fireworm rose and coiled above Luke, he knew he could never outrun the monster. He stopped and found secure footing and drew his lightsaber, igniting it. The green glow of his blade fought against the fiery orange of the lava chamber. The fireworm dove beneath the magma again, splashing molten rock into the air. Luke danced from stepping stone to stepping stone, trying to avoid the deadly firefall. He held his lightsaber in front of him. His every nerve was tuned, ready to respond, but he saw only the restless surface of the lava.
Where are you?
The fireworm's head exploded out of the lava on the other side, rearing up and plunging down to strike. Luke slashed with his humming green blade, but when the lightsaber smashed against the mirrored armor plates, the glowing green edge refracted into 1,000 components, splitting and ricocheting around the chamber. Sparks showered all around him. The energy blade that could supposedly slice through anything broke only one small silicon armor plate. On the other side of the chamber, the people of Il-Shah ducked to escape the flying shards of green power. Luke knew he could not use the lightsaber against the monster again. The fireworm yowled in surprise more than pain, then dove for refuge under the lava. Luke crouched, trying to figure out what to do next. The fireworm would return any minute. He didn't know how much time he would have. Suddenly, the creature launched itself out of the lava, roaring and hissing and making horrible sounds. Luke turned, ready to die in battle. But now the monster had no interest in him at all. Gouts of acrid smoke poured from the chink in the silicon armor, where lava ate its way into the fireworm's body core. The creature writhed, spewing lava into the air. Molten rock devoured the fireworm's internal organs, killing it from the inside out. When the fiery rock burned through to the fireworm's inflated air bladders, the creature exploded.
Come on, just squeeze a little more speed out.
10 system patrol craft, originally designed for maximum speed to combat smugglers and pirates, surged past the Falcon and lined up in a blockade. But in the three-dimensional vastness of space, Lando managed to slip under their grasp. Laser blasts erupted all around them. Lando stared out the viewport windows at the giant battleships moving toward them and the horrifying spectacle of the Maw. Even Luke couldn't translate R2's bleeps.
Only a complete idiot would go into a place like that.
Lando squeezed his eyes shut. Then let's just hope they're not idiots, too, Luke said.
Han touched the Sun Crusher's Navicomp, switching it on.
This thing is in better shape than the Imperial shuttle we stole. Are all the coordinates burned into the database, Doc?
Kui nodded, sitting down primly and strapping herself into her seat.
The Sun Crusher has been ready to go for years. We've just been waiting for orders from the Empire.
Standing at the door, Kip stuck his head out of the narrow hatch.
Here they come! Seal that hatch, kid. We're in here for the duration now. Chewie, have you found the weapons controls yet?
In the co-pilot's chair, Chewbacca ran his huge hands over the buttons and dials. Finally, he found what he wanted.
Defensive laser cannons, mounted at different targeting angles, swiveled as Chewbacca tested the aiming mechanisms. Small thuds banged against the Sun Crusher's hull as the stormtroopers fired their blaster rifles, causing no damage.
Han looked at Kui. We don't even have the shields on.
This armor will hold against anything they can throw against us, she said with a smug smile. It was designed to.
Han grinned.
Well, in that case, let's take a few extra seconds and do this right.
He worked the controls, activating the repulsor lift engines. The interior of the Sun Crusher wobbled as the entire craft rose into the air, floating on its repulsor cushion. Outside, they could hear the faint screeching of an alarm.
Chewie, point those laser cannons straight up. Let's give ourselves a 21-gun salute right through the roof.
Without waiting for Han to give the order, the Wookiee fired all of the Sun Crusher's weaponry at once. The ceiling of the hangar chamber blasted outward under the barrage of laser energy. Some of the larger chunks of rubble fell downward, clanging against the Sun Crusher's hull. But most of the skylights burst into space with an outrush of contained air that spewed into the maw. Stormtroopers were sucked out through the breach, flotsam among the debris in low orbit around the clustered rocks.
Han raised the Sun Crusher up, accelerating through the escape hole. They shot into open space, and Han felt an exhilaration he had not felt since they had first arrived at Kessel. Here goes nothing. Now for the fun part.
Staring down at the installation from the Gorgon's bridge, Admiral Dalla saw the puff of an explosion on one of the rocks of Maw installation. Then the tiny form of the Sun Crusher streaked by, a characteristically angular speck fleeing the confines of the planetoid containing it.
Red alert! Mobilize all forces! They have the Sun Crusher!
But, Admiral,
said the Star Destroyer's captain,
if the technical reports are correct, nothing can harm the Sun Crusher.
Dalla fixed Commander Kratos with her gaze.
Understand this, Commander. We cannot forfeit the Sun Crusher. Retrieve them at all costs.
Three Star Destroyers closed in behind the stolen Sun Crusher.
Didn't take them long to figure something was up, said Han.
Clouds of TIE fighters spewed out of the launching bays of the Star Destroyers Manticore and Gorgon, swarming toward them in dense formations. Flashing, splattering laser bolts struck like pelting raindrops on the viewscreen.
What are they doing? Trying to smother us or just confuse us?
Kui shouted. The Sun Crusher, undamaged, rocked left and right from the pummeling of blaster strikes.
No, but they can wipe out our external weaponry. In fact, they already have.
Han checked the readouts.
Every one of our lasers is offline.
We just have to outrun them, then, Kip said.
Another Star Destroyer, the Basilisk, unleashed its squadrons of TIE fighters. Who ever heard of a traffic jam in a black hole cluster?
Said Han.
The fourth and last Star Destroyer reared up between them and the outside universe, blocking their passage. The Hydra lanced out with its enormous turbolaser cannons, aiming concentrated firepower at the single small ship. The remaining three Star Destroyers pressed in from behind to cut off their escape through the maze of the black hole cluster. All right, hold on. Time to accelerate for whatever this fancy toy is worth.
Han pulled the control levers back. The sudden force shoved the four escapees back into their seats as the Sun Crusher surged forward, straight toward the Hydra. The huge battleship grew larger and larger, filling their entire field of view and still expanding. Great green turbo-laser bolts shot out at them, but the cannons could not refocus their aim points fast enough to compensate for the ship streaking directly at them.
Han, what are you doing? Kip cried.
Trust me, or rather, trust her.
Han nodded toward Kui.
If she messed up her test measurements, we're all going to be one big organic pancake.
The Hydra's trapezoidal bridge tower rushed toward them directly in their path. One suicidal TIE fighter rammed into the Sun Crusher to deflect its course, but merely exploded upon hitting the invincible quantum armor. Han had no trouble compensating for the error in trajectory.
Look out! Kui yelled.
Details of the bridge tower filled their view now as they screamed toward the Imperial battleship. Han could actually see the windows of the bridge, the tiny figures of the command crew, some of them paralyzed in horror, others fleeing madly.
Right down their throat!
The armored Sun Crusher tore through the Hydra's control bridge like a bullet. Flying debris sprayed in their wake. The ship shot out the other side, shredding the superstructure on its way out. The impact knocked them into a temporary stupor. Han finally whooped.
We've made it!
Behind them, the great battleship erupted in flames.
You're crazy.
Don't thank me yet, Doc.
Burning, out of control, the decapitated Hydra wheeled backward, drifting helplessly toward the gravitational trap of one of the black holes.
Now, we're not home free by a long shot. Okay, Kip, now it's your turn to take the controls. Get us out of here.
On the Gorgon's bridge, Admiral Dalla watched as the Hydra crumpled. Though her expression was carved in ice, hot tears burned unshed in Dalla's eyes. Glinting with its maddening invincibility, the Sun Crusher streaked through the wreckage.
After them! Dalla yelled. Full pursuit!
Kip Duron half-closed his eyes as he looked through a mental vision of the perilous maze to safety. He jerked the ship to starboard, then plunged down, frantically avoiding unseen obstacles. Han kept a firm, reassuring pressure on the boy's shoulder. Hot gas blazed around them. Kwee-Zook stared at Kip and his blind piloting, her dark blue eyes wide and her face transfixed with horror. Abruptly, the curtain of gas parted in front of them, peeling away to reveal the black infinity of open space. At last, they were free of the maw. In their mad run away from the forces of Kessel, Luke and Lando tried to push through the clustered capital ships. They winced simultaneously every time a bolt impacted the Falcon shields.
Just get us into the maw. It's our only chance.
I never thought I'd be keeping my fingers crossed for that to happen.
Lando hunched over the controls.
R2, see if you can pump up the front shields. We're going to take quite a pounding from that strike cruiser when we pass by. One good hit, we're fried.
Wait.
Luke squinted at the swirling gases ahead of him.
Something's coming out.
The thorn-like form of the Sun Crusher streaked away from the cluster, leaving a trail of hot gases. A few moments later, three fully armed Imperial-class Star Destroyers charged out of the maw like banthas on fire. Han Solo's sigh of relief turned into an exclamation of dismay as he saw the array of Kessel's battle fleet massed in front of them, weapons already blazing.
Where did all those ships come from? They can't still be waiting for us.
Chewbacca jabbed his hairy finger at the viewport, pointing to a ship at the vanguard of the gathered attack forces, the Millennium Falcon.
Han's lip curled. I'm going to get that slime merchant who's flying my ship. We'll ram them like we did that Star Destroyer.
Han, it looks to me like those other ships are chasing the Falcon. They're shooting at it.
Kui agreed with Kip.
That light freighter doesn't appear to be part of the attacking fleet.
Look at the rear screens, Han, said Kip. The Star Destroyers Gorgon, Basilisk, and Manticore burst out, giant demons loaded with destructive weaponry from the Fallen Empire.
Where in the universe did those Star Destroyers come from?
Lando asked. Lando looked down at the beeping comm. We're getting a message over the Falcon's private comm frequency.
Lando frowned.
How would anybody know to transmit that? How would anybody even know the Falcon's private code?
Whoever's on the Falcon better have a damn good reason for flying my ship.
Han, is that you?
A sudden thrill surged through Luke.
Lando? What are you doing here?
In space around them, blinding lances of light flashed as the weapons of two fleets were brought to bear. Like rival crate dragons in mating season, the Kessel and Imperial forces slammed into each other in a total free-for-all space brawl.
Han, listen to me. Luke is here, too. We've got to get away from Kessel, but the Falcon's navicomputer is disabled. We can't make the jump into hyperspace.
An explosion rocked them from the starboard side, but most of the Kessel fighters concentrated their firepower on the much larger threat of Dala's Imperial fleet. Though hopelessly outmatched, the three Carrick cruisers lined up and began to blast the Star Destroyer Basilisk. Over the private comm channel, they could hear Han speaking to someone else. Then he answered Lando.
We can dump the coordinates to your navicomp and we'll fly tandem back to Coruscant.
Lando checked the computer and raised a fist in triumph.
Got it! R2, get ready to go.
You'd better keep my ship safe, Lando. On my signal.
You have my word, Han. Lando's fingers flew over the Falcon's familiar controls.
Ready to enter hyperspace.
The Kessel forces flanked and attacked the far larger Star Destroyers, pummeling the Imperial ships with blasts from their ion cannons and turbo laser banks. But the Star Destroyers disgorged their own squadrons of TIE fighters to butcher the unregimented forces from Kessel. On your mark, Han.
Punch it!
The last thing they saw was Kessel's massive Lorinar strike cruiser exploding under the concerted fire from the Basilisk and the Gorgon. They watched the flaming hulk reel and ram into the Star Destroyer Manticore, causing the bottom of the Arrowhead hull to buckle and burn. Then the universe filled with star lines. The reunion was everything Han had imagined. Leia and the twins met him the moment the Sun Crusher and the Millennium Falcon touched down side by side at the high landing platform. Han backed out of the Sun Crusher's hatch and began climbing down the ladder, but Leia ran forward and hugged him before he managed to get all the way down. Glad I'm back?
I missed you, Leia said, kissing him.
I know.
She put her hands on her hips.
What? You didn't miss me?
Han turned away sheepishly.
Well, first we crashed on Kessel, then we were stuck in the spice mines, then we got captured by a bunch of Imperials in the middle of a black hole cluster.
When Leia looked as if she was going to punch him, Han grinned.
But even through all that, I don't remember more than about 2 seconds when I didn't miss you.
Leia kissed him again. R2 trundled down the Falcon's ramp, and 3PO bustled to greet him.
R2-D2, I'm so glad you're back. You wouldn't believe the difficulties I've had while you were gone.
Nobody bothered to translate. Kip Duran and Kwee-Zoox climbed down from the Sun Crusher and stared out at the endless spires and towers of Imperial City.
Now that's a city, Kip said.
Kwee looked overwhelmed. The Sun Crusher would be transferred to a high-security hangar for study by the scientists of the New Republic. Kwee did not like abandoning it, but she had no choice. Han strode over to his two children, bending his knees and gathering Jason and Jaina into his arms.
Hey, kids, you remember your daddy? It's been a long time, huh?
Jason nodded. Then a moment later, Jaina nodded as well. Han wasn't sure he believed their answer.
Well, if you don't remember me, I'll try to make it up to you from now on.
A puffed-up official wearing the bright uniform of an off-world administrative office finally cornered Lando in the highbrow diplomatic lounge. The official held an armored briefcase similar to the type credit investigators carried.
Are you Lando Calrissian? The official said. I've been attempting to locate you for several days.
Yes, you finally caught me. What do you want? I can get the best legal representation in the galaxy here in Imperial City.
That won't be necessary.
The investigator fiddled with the cipher lock of his armored briefcase. Seated beside Lando, Han raised his eyebrows. The official opened the case and glittering light spilled out. The briefcase brimmed with carefully sorted packets of fire facet gems and shimmering chrysopaz.
I am from the planet Dagul, and this is the reward owed to you by the Duchess Mistal for the safe return of her beloved consort, Dak, also known as Timo. You can have them appraised, but I am told these jewels are valued at approximately 1 million credits, plus the briefcase, which is worth another 40.
Han clapped Lando on the shoulder. What are you going to do with all that money? Still thinking of investing it in spice mining? Lando came back to reality with a streak of defensiveness. I hate to say this, but when Morath Duel showed us around, I was rather impressed by the potential there. Spice has plenty of good uses, too. Perfectly legitimate alternatives in psychological therapy, criminal investigation, communication with alien races, even artistic inspiration and entertainment. You knew that, Han, or you wouldn't have run Spice yourself in the old days. You got a point, Lando. Besides, I'm in the market for a new ship. I had to leave the Lady Luck stranded on Kessel. Seeing the eager stares from the others in the lounge, Lando snapped shut the lid of the armored briefcase.
Well, anyway, it's wonderful just to be solvent again.
Luke looked deep into the eyes of Kip Duran, searching for the core of a Jedi. The younger man flinched, but continued to meet Luke's gaze. Han interrupted them, clapping his hand on Kip's shoulder.
Oh, you should have been there to watch him zipping through the dark spice tunnels, and he navigated us right through the maw with his eyes closed. This kid has a lot of potential, Luke.
Luke nodded. I was about to do that trick in the maw myself. I know how difficult it must have been.
Does that mean you'll take me for your Jedi Academy? I want to know how to use this power I have. While I was sitting in a cell on the Star Destroyer, I vowed never to be helpless again.
Luke withdrew the power pack and sheet crystal sensor paddles from the old Imperial scanner that had once been used to detect Jedis. Let's try this scanner first. Untangling the cords, Luke stretched out the sheet crystal paddles on either side of Kip. This won't hurt, it just maps the potential of your senses. He tripped the scan switch on the control pack, and a narrow line of coppery light traveled down Kip's body, as a smaller image of the copper scan line reappeared in reverse motion in front of them, digitalizing its analysis of Kip Duran. Kip's reproduction hung in the air, bathed with the pale blue corona Luke had found on the others with genuine Jedi potential, but the aura waxed and waned, knotting itself, turning darker, growing brighter, streaked with red, then becoming tangled.
What does that mean?
He's okay, isn't he?
Han seemed eager to have his protege accepted. Luke wondered at the anomalous mapping, disturbed because he didn't know how to interpret it. The shimmer could be a result of faulty scanning equipment since the instrument had been roughly treated and could no longer be calibrated, or it could be that because of the strain and pressure on Kip for so many years, he hadn't quite sprung back to his full potential yet.
I see a lot of power there, a lot, Luke said.
And Kip sighed at the reassurance.
Let me try one other test.
Luke stretched out his hands to touch the curly black hair on Kip's head.
Let him do what he needs to do, Han whispered to the young man. Trust him.
Luke closed his eyes and sent a tendril of thought to the back of Kip's mind, where the deep primal memories hid, leaving little room for conscious thought. Luke touched inward to the isolated nub in his subconscious. He pushed
and suddenly found himself hurled backward, tossed aside like a piece of fluff in a B-spin windstorm. He landed flat on his back on the other side of the room, gasping.
Han and Kip ran toward him as he struggled to prop himself on his elbows. Luke shook the daze from his head.
I'm sorry. I don't know what I did. I didn't try to, honest.
What happened?
What does that mean for Kip?
Luke blinked, then smiled at the others. Don't worry about me. I triggered that myself. He shook his head. Kip, you have amazing power. Luke stood up and gripped the young man's hand. You're definitely welcome to train at my academy. I just hope I know how to handle it when you come into full control of your abilities. Luke Skywalker, Jedi Master, stood atop the great temple on the fourth moon of Yavin. Below his feet lay the empty throne room and grand audience chamber with skylights open to the sun. Garbed in a new Jedi cloak, wearing his lightsaber at his side, Luke felt warmth bathing him. Spicy, lingering scents rose as steam from the lush rainforest below. The ancient ruins left behind by the vanished Masasi race sprawled out in great geometrical edifices now overgrown by voracious jungles. Luke stood on top of the ziggurat that had once been a towering lookout station when the Alliance base had been housed on Yavin 4. In the sky, a swollen sphere of pale orange filled most of his view, the looming planet of Yavin. The bloated gas giant had been a shield for the Alliance base as the first Death Star orbited into position to fire with its planet-destroying superlaser. The Yavin base had been abandoned by the Alliance years before, but many of the broken stone structures were still serviceable. Having heard that the Maw fleet had survived the battle at Kessel, with Admiral Dalla no doubt still bent on the New Republic's destruction, Luke knew how desperately the Alliance needed a group of guardians. When Mon Mothma and Leia had offered Luke the abandoned Alliance base, he had jumped at the chance. To begin his actual training, Luke tried to recreate all the exercises Yoda had taught him on Dagobah, as well as the practice sessions Obi-Wan Kenobi had begun. Luke also had the ancient Jedi holocron, the visual historical database Leia had taken from the resurrected Emperor's stronghold. He had studied the information from the hidden repository of Jedi knowledge on Dathomir. He had many tools, and his students carried inside themselves doorways to great power. But again, Luke worried. If one of his trainees, or more than one, fell to the dark side, would he himself have the power to bring him back? And who was this dark man who haunted Gantoris's dreams with prophecies of destruction? As Luke regarded the sweeping vista of dense wilderness, he saw wide burned scars where fires had ravaged the rainforests. But the ecology of the moon had struck back with a vengeance, healing itself. Dense clusters of sharp-smelling blue-leaf shrubs, Masasi trees, and climbing ferns clogged the ground in an impenetrable mesh that stretched as far as he could see, broken only by scattered temple ruins poking through the greensward. The bizarre alien constructions left behind by the Masasi seemed filled with secrets and knowledge of their own. Luke blinked his eyes and felt the power of the place around him, the wonder, the mystery of it all. He could not wait to begin bringing his students here. It was the perfect place to train a new order of Jedi Knights. This is Anthony Heald. We hope you've enjoyed this production of Star Wars Jedi Search by Kevin J. Anderson. This program was produced by David Rapkin and directed by Lars Hoel. Abridgment by Trebby Johnson. Star Wars Jedi Search is a production of Lucasfilm Limited, copyright 1994, all rights reserved. Star Wars Jedi Search, Volume 1 of the Jedi Academy Trilogy, is available in paperback wherever Bantam books are sold.